This is going to be a great breakout. I'm really excited about having Brad Briscoe here with us, and I'm going to introduce him in a moment after I pray. What I want to pray for us just as we move into this in 2 Corinthians 4:16, maybe a familiar verse for you. It says, Paul says, therefore we do not lose heart. And what's really interesting about that whole text, it's not just this like, therefore don't lose heart in the normal things of life. It's all through 2 Corinthians, what he's saying is, I have given my body over to death that you might have life. I mean, it's this hard-pressed journey. And what he's saying, on this hard-pressed journey, there's a way to not lose heart. And he actually gives the way to not lose heart. And it says, therefore, do not lose heart. Though your outer bodies are wasting away, your inner body is being renewed day by day. These light and momentary afflictions are preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison. So we do not look to the things that are seen, but to the things that are unseen. For the things that are seen are transient, but the things that are unseen are eternal. I just want to pray that over this room. As we plant churches and as we do this work, there is this is a work where you can lose heart. But if we focus on inner renewal, if we focus on an eternal reward, if we focus on eternal things, we won't lose heart on this journey of planting and kingdom ministry. So I want to pray that over us, pray for Brad, and then he's going to come up, and I'm going to introduce him a little more after I pray. Let's pray. Father, I pray that over this room, or that the one who is losing heart, on the verge of will be soon, Lord, help us. Help us to be men and women who are renewed inwardly, that are experiencing the maturity that we can have in you, the abundance of life that we can have in you, the fruit of abiding and resting and remaining and seeking and setting our eyes on you. Lord, I pray that in this room, Lord, you would give us a greater hunger for you, Jesus, more than anything else. Renew us. Lord, help us to live for an eternal reward, as the text says, beyond all comparison. Lord, the struggle, the afflictions are nothing compared to the glory, the wonder, the majesty of the reward we will receive for the work that we do, letting loose of this world and serving you. And Lord, help us. Help us not to live in the transient, the temporary, the here one second, gone the next. Help us to live for eternal things. And so, Lord, we thank you for this time we have together. We thank you for your word, Jesus. We thank you for the cross. Help us to lean on you, and help us as we do to not lose heart. We ask in Jesus' name, amen. So Brad Briscoe is going to come up and share with us. I've really tried to think about how to introduce Brad other than this. Brad is a great friend. Brad is a missiologist at the core of who he is. Brad is a gospel-centered guy that believes in the church, believes that she can flourish, and really thinks outside of the box of how we can do that in North America. And he's going to be talking about co-vocational planning. I'll just say, from where I sit, I believe that what he's going to talk about today is essential for us to reach North America. And if we don't begin to rethink how we are going to do this, we will never get the job done. So I'm really grateful for Brad and the amount of time he has spent kind of serving us, serving the church to think through these things. And so let's welcome Brad as he shares.
All right. Well, we're just going to jump in. And here's what I want to do. I'm probably only going to share for about 20, maybe 25 minutes max. So as I share, I hope that you'll be thinking or writing down questions that you want to ask, because my favorite thing to do is a process. I want to make sure that, you know, we're kind of scratching an itch that you have as it relates to this topic. So to get us started, though, here's what I'm going to do. I'm gonna ask you a question, and I want you to just blurt out the answer, okay? Don't be shy. But I want to qualify. Don't blurt out. When I bring the question up on the screen, don't blurt it out yet, because I want to clarify, okay? So what I want to clarify is this isn't what you think. What do you think most people in the church, what comes to their mind when they hear the word bivocational? What do you think? Not you, but what do people in the church, when they hear the word bivocational or bivocationalism, what do you think comes to mind? Okay, church can't afford to pay you. Yeah. What else?
Part-time.
Struggle.
Hard work.
Hard work. Good.
Too busy.
By necessity only.
Okay. Ooh, very good. By necessity only. So you notice, I mean, just there's five comments. They're pretty much all negative, right? So I've had the opportunity to ask this question to probably 50 different groups, and 95% of the time, the answers are negative. Like my favorite answer, though, one time a guy shouted out, it means you suck at both work and church. And I just, that sums it up, right? Well, I don't think that's biblical, and it certainly isn't helpful. My point in doing that is I think, unfortunately, around bivocationalism, there is a biased narrative that we have to change. So how do we change the biased narrative? I think there's multiple ways to go about this, but there's three things I like to talk about all the time that I hope if you're bivocational, this will be an encouragement to you. But then also, if you work with bivocational leaders, I hope you'll share these things with them to be an encouragement to them, all right? So again, there's lots of other things we could talk about, but these are kind of the big three rocks for me when it comes to trying to change the biased narrative. The first thing I think we need to do is we have to highlight the benefits. There are enormous benefits of being bivocational. And I usually frame the benefits around three phrases, all right? The first one is missiological. In fact, I would say I'm convinced bivocational or co-vocational, we're going to talk about here in a minute, church planting is the single best missiological strategy for church planting. Now, I'm a big both and guy. It's not either or, but unfortunately, historically, it's been either or. Like we've had one particular type of strategy when it came to church planting, but I think missiologically, there are enormous benefits of being bivocational. I'll give you just a couple examples. One is that you have access to a mission field you wouldn't have otherwise. It's a no-brainer, right? Everybody gets that. If you have even a part-time job in the marketplace, you have access to people, connections that you'd never have. And in a rapidly, rapidly increasing missionary context that all of us live, we all know more and more people are less and less interested in the programs, activities of the church. So we have to go where they are. And I'm convinced one of the best places to go is the marketplace. So great missiological benefit there. But then another way I think we can kind of nuance kind of the missionary or missiological benefit is I'm convinced it gives you as a bivocational church planner great street cred or respectability both inside the church and outside the church. So inside the church, and we all know this, and again, I'm not diminishing full time. There's a place for full time, fully funded church planters. But I'm convinced people in the congregation will appreciate knowing that you can relate to the struggles they go through Monday through Friday, even if it's only a part-time job that you have in the marketplace. So I think there's great respectability that takes place or street cred for people inside your church. But perhaps even more important than that is outside the church. Again, in an increasing missionary context, we all know that, you know, when someone asks you, what do you do? And if you have to lead with, I'm a pastor or a church planter, for a lot of people, that's just weird. It's like, what does that even mean? You're a church planter. But if you can lead with what you do in the marketplace, it just creates relational, conversational opportunities that you wouldn't have otherwise. So just a couple of ideas there. I think there's missiological benefits. But the second one is I think there's enormous financial benefits. So once again, I like to frame this around three little words or phrases. First off, I think there's great financial benefits for the church planter. So if the primary support for the planter is coming from the marketplace, I've just discovered there's less financial strain on the church planter's family, especially if that support, not just financial support, but if there's benefits. I mean, we all know insurance is a huge deal, right? Well, if your marketplace calling can provide insurance, it just provides, you know, less financial strain. But vacation, retirement, you know, all kinds of benefits can come from the marketplace. So I think there's great financial stability for the church planter. Secondly, I think there's greater financial stability for the church plant. Once again, this is a no-brainer, but when the primary support for the planter is coming from the marketplace, there's just more resources available for the church plant to engage in mission and ministry. And then third, I think there's greater financial stability for the church planting entity. So in our tribe, that could be a local association or network. It could be a state convention. It could be the North American Mission Board or the SIN Network. The reality is we don't have enough money to plant all the churches that we need to plant unless we engage with bivocational and co-vocational leaders. And we also know many of our cities are just too expensive to send a fully funded planter in, you know, downtown Boston or downtown Vancouver or just all over the country. And we also know there are people groups that it doesn't matter if you gather 100 or 150 people, they're not going to be able to give enough if we define sustainability for that pastor to have a full-time job. That's just not going to happen. So as it relates to the church planting entity, enormous benefits, okay? So how do we change the bias narrative? We talk about the benefits, the missiological benefits, the financial benefits. And then lastly, I don't know how else to say this, but I think there are some shared leadership benefits. In other words, if you're co-vocational, we all believe if you're involved in church planting, you should never plant a church by yourself. You should plant with a team. Well, if you're bivocational or co-vocational, there's no other option. Like, you have to plant with.
And we're going to talk more about that in a minute. Here, wait, I've got another one.
Okay, there we go. And the other thing here with shared leadership, not only as it relates to planting and your church planting team, but we like to talk about the priesthood of all believers, but we don't really live into that a lot of times. So I think bivocational or co-vocational planting helps to diminish what I would call the sacred-secular divide and the clergy-laity divide. So we, in a sense, we need to deprofessionalize ministry, and I think that's actually an outcome or a benefit of bivocational or co-vocational church planting, all right? So to change the bias narrative, we have to talk about the benefits. Secondly, I think we need to highlight bivocational and co-vocational planter. So here's the thing I'll say all the time, is that if you're a bivocational planter, please, please, please don't be shy about telling your own story, because people need to hear your story. But if you're not bivocational planter and you know someone that is, please tell their story. You need to tell their story to be an encouragement to them, because unfortunately, a lot of bivocational or co-vocational planters, they feel like second-class planters. Because the people that we highlight, you know, at conferences and stages and books and all of that are usually the, you know, the leaders of very large churches. So a lot of times they feel like they're on the junior varsity team. So tell their story to be an encouragement to them, but then also tell their story because it'll crack open the imagination of others. I tell you all the times that I'll tell a story about a bivocational or co-vocational planter and someone will say, "I didn't know that was an option. Like, I didn't know I could be a school teacher and plant a church. I was told I had to choose. Like, I was called to be an engineer or an architect, and I went to, a leader in the church, and the leader told me, hey, if I'm really serious about ministry, you need to get out of that secular business and focus full-time on ministry." So we have to tell the stories of bivocational planters that are out there, all right? And then the last thing is I'm convinced we need to expand the language. So not change the language, but we need to expand it. You might ask, well, why do we need to expand the language? Well, think about this. When you hear the word bivocational, sometimes I'll explain it like this. Have you ever heard the word bifurcate? So bifurcate means to take one thing and divide it into two parts. Well, unfortunately, I think we do that a lot of times with the word bivocational. So too often we compartmentalize or bifurcate. So I'll hear bivocational planters sometimes say things like this. They'll say, well, I do my work over here so I can do mission and ministry over here. We're bifurcating something that I don't think should be divided. So a few years ago, probably, I don't know, 6 years ago, at the SIN Network, we just started playing around with different language, and we kind of landed on this word co-vocational. So think of the word co-vocational. Co, comes from the Latin prefix com, C-O-M, which means to have in common or to be together. So think about words like co-labor or co-pilot or co-author. It's about aligning two things together rather than bifurcating or compartmentalizing. So I still use the language, you notice I've already done this like a dozen times. I still use the language of bivo and covo, but here's the little nuance for me that I hope will be helpful for you. For me, a bivocational church planter is someone who works a second job to supplement the salary the church provides. Their hope is that the church will eventually grow enough so that they can leave their part-time job and focus full-time on the church. Okay? to that, I would say two thumbs up. That's a good thing. In fact, you might think of like the Apostle Paul in Acts 18. You know, Apostle Paul was a tent maker. So this is typically the way we thought about bivocationalism. And I planted a church like this 30 years ago. I think I had 6 jobs at one point. But my goal or dream or aspiration that the church would grow large enough that I could leave my 6 jobs and actually just focus on the church. But I think we need to expand that language. We can still use that language, but I think there are thousands and thousands of potential co-vocational church planters sitting in our churches that, once again, think they have to choose. So here's a little nuance for me with the word co-vocational. A co-vocational church planter is someone who has a clear calling in the marketplace that they never intend to leave. They know God has called them to be a school teacher, a mechanic, a graphic designer, engineer, or business owner, and at the same time, they believe God is calling them to plant a church. So I hope you see, we're not pitting one of these against the other. I just think they're two different things, and I think we needed to expand the language, come up with another word that would encourage people that feel full-time called into the marketplace, but we want to help them think, how do I think about church planting as a co-vocational leader? So before we're finished, we wouldn't be honest if we didn't recognize the challenges. So it's interesting, over the last 2 or 3 years, I've had the opportunity to interview probably 50, purely co-vocational church planters. And I have 8 questions I like to ask them. The first question is always, what's the number one benefit of being co-vocational? And every single time, it's no exaggeration, there's no exception to this, the number one benefit is always access to a mission field they wouldn't have otherwise. So they use different language for it. Sometimes a guy will say, like, it never stops. Like, you know, I have all these relational connections. I mean, every day I meet someone new. But the number one benefit always has to do with that. The number one challenge, you can guess, is always time. I mean, if you're working 30, 40, 50, 60 hours a week in the marketplace, you've got to figure out, how am I going to balance church, you know, ministry, life, family, all of that. So I just want to hit on this, and then we can talk more about it if you want. And then I'm going to give you my email when we're finished. And I've got lots of different tools and resources that have kind of been created over the last few years around co-vocational church planting that I can tell you where to go, or I can just send them to you. But there's 3 things I just want to hit on, because if you're really considering co-vocational church planting, you've just got to recognize and acknowledge the greatest challenge is going to be time, and how do we overcome that? So for me, there's more than 3 things, but there's 3 things I want to mention. The first one is team. I've already mentioned this, that we all believe you should plant a church with a team. But if you're co-vocational, if you're working 40 or 50 hours a week in the marketplace, there's no other option. Now, my personal bias is, too often when we talk to church planters about church planting teams, they think of ministry categories. So in other words, they think, well, I need a worship leader, I need a children's person, a youth person. I think from a church planting team perspective, the best way to think about teams is giftings. So I'm a big proponent of APEST. I don't know how familiar you are. APEST is an acrostic from Ephesians chapter 4. I just think that's the best way to start with what it looks like for the team dynamics of your church planting team. So that's the first thing you have to recognize, is you have to have a team, and you need to develop that team as it relates to dynamics, productivity, and the development of that group. And I'm going to tell you about a resource that you can tap into on that topic here in just a minute before we wrap up. So that's the first thing. Second thing is, if you're truly co-vocational, I think we have to rethink how we go about planting a church. And the good thing is, if you're co-vocational, I'm convinced you have a much longer runway. But I'm convinced we have to start with missionary behaviors and activities, not the Sunday morning worship service. Now, of course, we'll get to the Sunday morning worship service because we are a worshiping, gathering community. But I'm convinced, once again, in an increasing missionary context, we can't start with the Sunday morning service. We need to start with missionary behaviors and activities. As Vance would say, engage the city, make disciples, then plant the church, right? So I just think, if you're co-vocational, once again, to overcome that challenge of time and time management, not only do you need a team, you've got to rethink how you're going about planting the church. And the third thing, I think we have to rethink scorecards. We have to rethink how we're going to define success. Now, once again, I'm going to share a free ebook that you can download. I'll give you the link to where to go to get that. And there's a couple of chapters in there on this topic, on scorecards. I just think historically, we like to count. And what we like to count is how many people show up and how much money they give. I'm convinced we need to both count and measure. And counting is quantitative, measuring is qualitative. I think we need to do both. And I think the reason we often just count is it's easy to count. It's easy to count how many people show up. So I think there are, still are some things we count, but I think we need to count missionary behaviors and activities, and then we need to measure changes taking place inside the church, but also changes taking place in the community as the church engages the city. So those are things that I just think speak into the challenge of time. Plant with a team, rethink how we're our strategy for planting, and then rethink scorecards. So last thing, and then again, I just want to really have a time of Q&A, see what are you processing as it relates to this topic, but a couple of things. First off is all of us need to be involved in changing the bias narrative. Once again, if you're a Bivo planter, don't be shy to tell your story. And then please, if you're in a position where you work with other bivocational or co-vocational planters, encourage them by sharing their story and help them see that what they're doing isn't just legit, it's absolutely necessary. Like this, a lot of times people will say, oh yeah, I see, this is like the wave of the future. And I'm gonna say, no, it's the wave of the present. Like we're already behind the eight ball if the only plants we're planting is with fully funded planters. We've got to engage bivocational and co-vocational planters. So second, I would say, is download, there's some free resources. So one, a book I wrote about 4 years ago, it's just called Co-Vocational Church Planting. It's really easy for me to promote that book because it's free. So if you go to the brand new site that we launched just about 3 weeks ago, it's just covochurchplanting.com. That's a new page on the Sin Network website. And when you go to that page, there's about a five-minute little video that I do just to kind of give the distinctions between Bivo and Covo. And there's a place where you can sign up for a webinar. So I'm going to do a monthly webinar. It's just a 50-minute webinar. We'll do live every month just to help people go a little bit deeper into the benefits and challenges of being Covo. And then also at the bottom of the page, you'll see there's a link that you can click on. It's just the cover of the book, and it'll take you to a landing page where you can download that book for free. And then there's another ebook that I wrote about 4 years ago that's just called Rethink. And it's subtitled Nine Paradigm Shifts for Activating the Church. That's also a free ebook in English and Spanish. So there I would just say, just Google Rethink ebook. And once again, it'll take you to a landing page where you can download that for free. All right. The other thing, the fourth bullet then, is if you want to go a little bit deeper in this, I've created a 12-week, 100% virtual co-vocational church planning training that's online. And I disperse five webinars throughout the 12 weeks just for a little bit of accountability so you'll actually go through the content. But also, it's just a beautiful place to create space for other co-vocational planters that are in a cohort to come online and process with me and each other. So if you have any interest in that, my email address, just bbriscoe@nam.net. Just shoot me an email and I can let you know the next cohort. We just finished a cohort last week, but sometime here in the next couple of weeks, I'll start another one. So just let me know if you're interested in that. And then if you're in the breakout with Brian Beloy before lunch, he mentioned a couple other courses that we've created that are also 100% virtual. One is called Cultivating Healthy Church Planting Teams. That's a four-week course. And once again, I've dispersed three webinars throughout it. So if you have churches that are forming their team, here's a little parameters I usually put on that. That to be either 6 months out from starting or 1 month into your church plant. So this is all about how can you develop the church planting team that you're working with. And then the last course is one that's going to be available here in about 2 weeks. I'm just calling Engage Your City. So it's a seven-week course, all online, four webinars, just to give you like the missiological foundation of why, and then a whole lot of practical resources on how to really engage your city. So all of those, if you'll just shoot me an email, I'll send you an outline of what the training looks like, and then let you know like the next time we're going to start a cohort. Okay. Oh, last thing. I mean, this is a little thing, but it's just been an incredible resource. Is when I wrote this book 4 years ago, just to create a space for people to like have a book discussion. I started a Facebook group that's just co-vocational church planting. There's almost 1,800 people in this group now, and it's a private group, so people have to ask to join. And I would say 90% of the people in the group are either bivocational or co-vocational. And there's so much expertise and experience in that group that a lot of times when I have a conversation with a bivo-covo planter, I'll just say, look, if you're not a part of the group, go join the group and ask your question, throw it out in the group, because just wonderful expertise in that group. So if you are bivo-covo, if you're interested in that at all, yeah, if you're on Facebook, just search co-vocational church planning. Trust me, it's the only thing that will come up. But it'll be this group, and yeah, feel free to join. So, all right, last thing. Again, I just want to create space. Anything that I shared that was very quick, I know, but any questions, just things you're processing around this topic, anything about benefits, challenges, or anything else? Yep, let's start here. Yeah, that's good. I doubt that everybody heard. He was just kind of asking, what do you do with teams and the dynamics, and how do you know when someone's ready to, you know, lead certain aspects of the ministry and all that? This is going to sound like a cop-out, but take the course that I just created. Just because I tell you, it's complicated. It's not complicated, but it's complex, I think. And the way I try to frame the way we think about church planting teams is around four words. The first word is dynamics. That we got to understand what are the giftings of everybody on our team, and let's make sure they're in the right space, they're in the right spot, right? They're operating in their sweet spot. And that's why I think APES is so helpful, because it's about giftings, apostolic, prophetic, evangelistic, shepherding, and teaching. So you identify someone that has the teaching gift, and then actually Ephesians 4 is an equipping text. It's about, it's not leaders equipping the saints, it's the saints equipping the saints. I mean, I don't know how familiar you are with Ephesians 4, but that's a body text, it's not a leadership text. So we need to help teachers in our congregation equip other teachers. We need to help evangelists equip other evangelists. So it's dynamics. That's a huge piece. The second piece is productivity. So in that part, if you're familiar with Working Genius is just a really good assessment about getting stuff done. It's about tasks. So that's the second component of the training is productivity. The third is development. It's not just personal development, how do we take personal development and move it into the team? And then the last one is just on sustainability. And this has to do with bivo-covo stuff. This has to do with conflict resolution. So all of that, I just say, yeah, man, it's a great question. I just think it's complex, and we have to address it from several different angles. And that's what we try to do in this four-week course.
Hey, Brett, One of the things that maybe to help dialogue this a little bit is, you know, I think what Brad's really talking about is like rethinking a lot of the ways that we think about how we do church, how we do ministry in the day to day. And so, you know, Jesus would kind of do it maybe like this. So this is how I'm gonna pose a couple questions to you for the group. So, Jesus would say, you know, you have heard this, but I tell you. Like, what would be some of those, like, what if you had to, like, kind of, you've heard it said this, but I tell you this. What are some things that we have to deconstruct in order to, like, actually begin to think differently about how we do this?
So the first thing I always like to say, are we recording this? But I know that we are. So, well, again, the Rethink book is about key paradigm shifts. I mean, I'm just convinced if we've been church for a very long time, and most of us in this room probably have been, we've been discipled into American evangelicalism, that there are deeply held assumptions about church, mission, discipleship, evangelism, I would even say the gospel or Christology, that we have to unlearn and relearn. So I think that's at the foundation. I mean, we have to completely rethink, I think, church planting. And that's one of the things I find It's going to get me in trouble. But in especially in our tribe. So another thing I'm very passionate about is alternative expressions of church. I mean, again, both and not either or. But I think there are lots of different smaller expressions of church. Let's just use that phrase, of churches being planted all around the globe. But that's a really hard conversation to start sometimes in our tribe. But I notice if you start with Bivo Covo, almost everybody, if you talk about the benefits of it, they go, oh, yeah, I get that. But if you really are co-vocational, in other words, you're working 40 or 50 hours a week in the marketplace, you can't plant a church the way we've always planted churches. So it eventually leads to having a conversation about alternative expressions of church. Does that make sense? So back to what you said, Brian, yeah. Or Ryan, you... Yeah, there's all kinds of things, I think, that are theological and missiological, like rethinking that has to take place.
And I think part of this conversation that I just want to highlight, because I've heard Brad talk about this a lot, is that this is sort of like new wine
sure.
kind of right. language. Like, if you're just trying to stuff co-vocational
right.
into how we've always done this,
right. won't work.
You'll kill yourself.
That's right.
And so right. it forces a different conversation. And so the pastoral role has to function different because
right.
he can't be there at noon on Tuesday.
That's right.
And so how does the body, the fullness of the team function to get this done? Yep. So there's a...
Yeah, that's good.
If you're just stuffing this thinking in what we've always thought, it just won't work.
Right. No, that's a really good word. So, Will?
Church, and also we are in a region where 70-80% even higher percent of our planters are co-vocational, bivocational.
Right.
But what we are realizing that the image we ourselves have of a healthy, amazing church, we can't do it as we are co-vocational, bivocational. We can't. Now, the question is, many of us accepted that, yeah, we can't be that kind of pastor, we can't have that kind of church. But then for us to think about what then is our kind of church that we can do, we're kind of lost. So the what we can afford to have, which even this language is so terrible, like, okay, now that I'm busy, now that I'm like broke or something, what kind of church can I afford to have? And the biggest issue is I don't know where to go get this idea of what ecclesiology is for people like
right.
us. Right? So what would you advise us? Where can we look?
Can I turn this off? No. Go ahead. Yeah. And then, yeah, help me avoid Will's question. Well, and many of you are familiar with language like missional community. I mean, one of the things I'm to go back to Will's, I'm not going to try to avoid it. I do think smaller expressions of church, but let me a little word of caution. Even when you use the language of bivocational or co-vocational, don't connect it to the word model, but instead connect it to the word strategy. I think it's the best missiological and financial strategy for church planting. But it's a lot of times when you hear bivocational, you just think small. And it doesn't have to be that way. I know churches all across the country that are led by bivocational or co-vocational teams, and they're not small. I mean, they have more of an attractional kind of approach, but the whole team is bivo-covo. So it's not about a model, it's about a strategy. Now, having said that, I do think when we think about alternative expressions of church, especially as a church planter, we need to start thinking more and more about networks of smaller expressions. And I don't care if you use the language of missional community or microchurch, and I know Will's very familiar with that, but there are dozens and dozens and dozens now of microchurch networks all over the country. So I was a CPC in Kansas City for a very long time, 16 or 17 years, but 5 years ago we moved to the Tampa Bay area. And frankly, one of the reasons we moved there, it's not an SBC church, but I've become very good friends with several leaders of a network of microchurches there called the Tampa Underground. If you're into church planting, you have any interest in kind of microchurch planting, first thing I would say is Google Tampa Underground. They have a fantastic website. But then secondly, I would say get a hold of a book. It was written about 5 years ago by Brian Sanders. He's one of the founders of the Underground. It's just called Underground Church. It's super, super practical. Tells the story of the Tampa Underground. They've been at it now for about 17 years. So there's a lot of proof of concept there. And then there's another really healthy network that was started in Kansas City 5 years ago called the KC Underground. Rob Wegner, one of the key leaders there, wrote a book called The Starfish and the Spirit. It's kind of their story and how they've gone about the network of microchurches in KC. So the point back to Will's question is I do think one of these really deep questions we have to struggle with, some people use the language of minimal ecclesiology. I would say essential ecclesiology. You have to decide, how do you define a church? Like, what are the essential elements that make up the church? The Underground would say, and they use the language of minimal ecclesiology, they would say it's three things. It's worship, community, and mission. Like, if a microchurch isn't a microchurch unless it has those three things. So you have to decide what's your minimal ecclesiology. But I do think in many cases, when we're planting in missionary context, we have to think about smaller expressions of church that will probably network together in larger gatherings, if that makes sense. So let's jump around here. We just go ahead, go here, and then let's go back in the back.
When it comes to gathering of Christians.
Yes.
The church planter, they are not full-time, but they were there to do their job as a mechanic, engineer,
yep.
accountant. And they reach more people in Saudi Arabia.
That's right.
So that we can understand the convocation in a positive sense.
Yes, 100%. Thank you for that. Yes. So there in the back. Okay, it's not on the dark side.
but I'm hearing this, and I'm like nodding my head, and I'm so excited about it. Any tips on like how to train someone to be a co-vocational pastor without cramming what we're currently doing into their job?
Yeah, well, there's a whole lot there, I think. I mean, first, and again, it's easy to promote because it's free. If someone is open to it, download the Covo book and have them read it. It's just going to give them some language and perspectives they might have otherwise. Also, if someone is really serious and they want to go through that 12-week cohort, really, my favorite, I mean, it's what I want to spend, I'm getting old. It's like, that's what I want to spend the rest of my ministry time is just, I just want to encourage and pour in the lives of those that are potential Covo planters and some that maybe that are already like on that journey. Because again, there's just not a whole lot out there for them to be an encouragement and to really to train them to think differently. So I'd say if you've got some guys that would be interested, man, we could create a cohort just with those four or five guys that are, you know, maybe connected together. Also, I say email me. I have created a couple of docs. Like, a lot of times I'll get questions on, like, what are good for somebody that's an entrepreneur, like, what's a good startup? So I've got a doc that just kind of lists, like, what are the 13 best startup kind of businesses that fit with a co-vocational planter? Because a co-vocational planter can be someone that has a calling in the marketplace, like an engineer or architect or school teacher, but a lot of times it's a business owner. It's somebody that says, like, well, look, I'm not co-vocational now, but I want to start a business to bring sustainability to the church plant and give me relational capital in my community. So I've just kind of worked through what are a dozen, there's 13 of them, of what those are, and then what are the, like, the first 7 or 8 steps you need to take to lean into those 13 possibilities. So again, just shoot me an email and tell me what you're looking for, and I can send you that doc. What else? Sure.
And got burned out. I have 5 young kids. I was still going to seminary. I was a marketing director. And so I kind of naturally have a bad taste.
Sure.
But I see the benefits of it. And I have 2 guys that are business owners that feel called to church planting. So how can I kind of reframe? And it seems like there's a book and a course that I should look at. But just kind of reframing things and then help prepare them for this.
Right. So did you hear what he asked? I mean, he planted as a co-vocational and got burned out. I mean, and I get it. So, and part of it is because you probably just didn't have a lot of kindred spirits, right, to say. But part of it, I think, because you have a long runway, you don't have to worry about your funding ending, go slow. Like, no, you have a long runway, right? Things don't have to happen quickly. The second thing we've already said, but you have to have a team. Just, I know this is a little idealistic, but like my future perfect picture of this is that you have 2 or 3 co-vocational couples and 2 or 3 co-vocational singles that all go together somewhere to plant a church. And all of them have a full-time job in the marketplace, but every one of them can say, hey, we can give 6 hours a week, or we can get 8 hours a week, or 10 hours a week towards a church plant. Can you imagine the relational capital those 15 or 20 people would have if they all had full-time jobs in the marketplace? And can you imagine the financial capital? Like, they're not, no one's taking money from the church, but they can all give 6, 8, 10 hours a week to the church plant. We just have to go back to what Ryan said. We have to rethink church planning, church leadership. I mean, it has to be the body of Christ, right? And again, I know it sounds idealistic, but we have to diminish this clergy-laity divide. I mean, we have to activate all the people of God. And that's another reason why I'm a pretty strong proponent of this APES type of thinking, because it's about not just the giftings of your church planting team, but it's the giftings of the body of Christ, and everybody has to play. Like, no one sits on the bench. Otherwise, if we try to plant a church the way we've always planted churches, but as a co-vocational planter, you will get burned out. There's no other option. So let's go back here.
What was that resource that
So I'm actually, sounds ridiculous, I'm actually working on another course, but I have a doc. If you're not very familiar with it, I have like a 7-page, just a white paper. It's like a real simple introduction to APES. Again, email me and just say, I'd like the APES doc. And then at the end of that doc, I list 5 or 6 other resources that other people that have written that I, if you really want to go deeper into it, I give you a list of resources. But if you're not real familiar with it, this little white paper that I've written is probably a good place just to start. So what else? Yes, sir.
Yeah, it's not really a question, but we call it a bivocational. I've been in the church planting for 19 years, and it's really hard in a way, and really my children suffer as well. Mm. But in the end, by God's grace, they come back. So it's really, I'm an interior designer full-time, but now I'm retired.
Very good.
I love what you said in regards to the APES. Like, really, I need a strategy to have someone to really together and really touch.
Very good. Well, and just in light of what he said, and what this brother shared, if you are bivocovo or you're thinking going that direction, just don't do it until you have a team, until you have other people that will go with you. And here's the other thing I would say. This is another little nuance, but I hear bivocational co-planters all the time, if they don't have a good theology of work. I've actually had planters say, I feel guilty the time I have to spend in the marketplace because I can't spend it on the church. And jokingly, I'll say, I want to slap you. because they, again, here's this sacred secular divide they have as it relates to vocation. We need to help everyone understand, regardless of what God's called you to do in the marketplace, it matters. Like, we've been created for good, right? We've been created for work to bring about good in our communities. So part of this is we need to, like, recapture a good theology of work so we don't bifurcate our work and our church planting efforts, that we see how they align together. And sometimes in very, very practical ways they align, but we need to understand when we're at work, it's a good thing. That's a ministry. All work matters. And you're in full-time ministry there. Don't bifurcate those two things. Yeah, so something I get in trouble for tweeting, but something I tweet just about every Saturday night is there's two things. One, I'll say, church planter, don't focus too much attention on how many people join you tomorrow morning, but instead focus on the relational connections in your neighborhood, workplace, and social spaces. And the other thing I like to say all the time is we need to help church planters think less like a pastor starting a Sunday morning worship service and more like a missionary engaging their context. So, again, I'm not anti-worship. We are a gathering, worshiping community, but we just can't start there. We've got to start. So missionary behaviors and activities, there's a lot of things involved with that, but one of the ways I like to frame missionary behaviors and activities is around a sociological concept that's called first, second, and third places. Some of you probably heard that. Sometimes people use the phrase where you live, work, and play, but it's a super, super helpful way to frame missionary engagement. First place is where you live. It involves biblical hospitality in your neighborhood. Second place is where you work. And third place are places of common ground or with their hangouts. It's where people used to go hang out, and we zoned a lot of them out of the places that we live. Now we're starting to zone them back. But we need to identify social spaces in our communities where we can become a regular in that space. So I think that's just a really helpful way to think about missionary engagement, is to say, well, okay, how can I engage people that aren't coming to my church? I need to find other places to build relational capital. I can do it in my neighborhood, I can do it in my workplace, and I can do it in social spaces that I inhabit throughout the week. So there's a whole bunch of kind of missionary behaviors and activities that are organized around those three spheres. So once again, in the Covo book, there's like eight lessons or eight chapters that are just on that. What else? Yeah, that's a great question. No, right now, as it relates to like pre-assessment and all of that, it's the same. Now, I did create a 20-question co-vocational self-assessment. Once again, happy to send that to you. It's just a one-page PDF. It's a fillable PDF. And then I also have a questionnaire where a church planting leader could use with somebody that is thinking about COVO. They're just questions that you can ask that person to kind of assess, Are they a good fit for this? Because you have to be wired a certain way. I mean, like, you have to be able to spin a lot of plates at one time. You know, there's lots of different things. But it's all doable, and I think it's very doable if you don't plant by yourself. All right. Wait, two more questions maybe? One more? Okay, one more question. Go ahead.
How do you reconcile the financial differences when you get into context, not COVO as much, but specifically FIVO, where guys are doing two things and one's paying a lot more than the other? So they're sensing that draw, they're trying to have that conversation. And I guess the secondary question to that is there a large amount of differences in what guys are actually making in the pastorate that are FIVO based on their situation, or does it also depend on that career that they're maybe trying to live?
Yeah, it just depends. And I just see, I mean, that's a good question, but I just see it all over the map. I mean, and as far as the struggle, I mean, you just have, you know, you've got to have some wise counsel in your life to, you know, just make sure that it's not about financial gain. And the Covo guys, I know, they're not. I mean, they wouldn't be planting a church, you know, regardless of how much money they're making in the marketplace. They wouldn't be planting a church if you know, they didn't feel like God had really called them and they were passionate about it. But, yeah, as far as that that second question, I'm not sure how to answer that. Sorry. Sorry, I think we're out of time.
Maybe just to wrap up, I would just really encourage I can think of multiple guys I'm working with right now that are co-vocational. You know, one of my guys, like, you know, he's co-vocational, but he is still thinking old model. And the reason I know it is he had this really amazing pulpit built, and he's got like five people in his church. And he really wants a platform. He really wants a full room. And he's really not engaged in his city. And he's just really trying to feed his family. And there has to be just a, and there's nothing wrong. He's a great guy. But there's just a whole different way that we've got to think about this thing. And so here, one of the things that I would really, I don't care if you're not even going co-vocational. Everybody that is at this conference, all of us have to, and I would use the word minimums. We need to think about, what is my ecclesial minimum? What's my minimum of what a disciple is? Like, have you ever defined that? Because you can't build something you don't define. You can't like have a church that you haven't, like, what is the minimum that this thing is actually a church? So I would, if I were to encourage a takeaway, I'd like really think through, what are those minimums? If you're like me, I did it the hard way, where I had got very frustrated in ministry and had to figure out what do I even think about this? And so I would encourage you to those things. And so I'm gonna ask you one more question, Brad, and then we're out.
And we do have to be out here at 2 o'clock, because there's another.
That's right. That's right. So the question is, like, for them to come to those minimums, what advice would you give, like, to go on that, like, to begin that journey of, like, discovering? Because that isn't a conference you go to. That's deeply personal, theological, convictional. What are my minimums that I'm willing to, like, say unto the Lord, this is how I'm going to glorify you, by making disciples? I've defined it. What would you say?
Well, I would just say, consider that from the start. Like, I mean, ask yourself, if you're already in a church, just say, hey, if we're going to start a church tomorrow, like, where would we have to be for in our minds for that to be a church? And try to strip away some of the stuff. I mean, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff we do that isn't essential. So, and then the other thing, and I mentioned this already, there's a really good discussion on minimal ecclesiology in the Underground Church book. Why did they get to where? And Brian just does a great job of saying, look, all these other things are really important or good, but are they essential? Like, is this what makes up the church, or is it just these three things? So,
well, I believe this again. Thanks, Brad. Let's thank Brad for sharing with us today. I believe this is a very, very critical. If we want to reach every man, woman, and child in our society, we have to think about how do we, like, every domain of society, education, government, religion, sport, every domain, like, how do we get into it? We just have to rethink this whole thing very, very differently. So let's pray, and we'll be dismissed. Father, grateful for Brad Briscoe, Lord, and the gift he is to us. Thank you for the work that he does. Lord, would you continue to use him in our lives and in this movement of Sin Network, Lord? And I pray for every person in this room that you would help us to walk away, rethinking that which you'd have us to rethink. And Lord, might you do abundantly more than we could think or imagine as we follow you and follow your ways. Jesus, we love you, grateful, and ask this in your name, Jesus. Amen.